Today on the Cooligans, we have a very special episode. We are joined by the one and only, the legend, Derek Ray. He is the voice of EAFC. He is the voice of Bundesliga on ESPN, and he will be the voice this summer at the 2026 World Cup on Fox. We'll talk to Derek about how he became the voice of EAFC. We talk some Bundesliga, we talk some USMNT, and we talk about how the current political standing in this country is going to affect the World Cup and soccer as a whole. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. I am absolutely thrilled about our next guest. A man whose voice has been in our lives for essentially, as far as for a lot of people who play EAFC or previously FIFA, you've grown up with
this
voice.
It's the sound of football. It's the sound of soccer. The aura this man carries, by the way, is insane.
And we got to meet him in person.
That's how I know, because the closer you get to him, the harder it is. It's like gravity. You know what I mean?
You're like, I can't pull away. We met him in Germany. We in Hamburg. We were lucky.
Starstruck.
Lucky enough to be on a trip, a Bundesliga media trip, and we're in Hamburg. And I was more excited to see him than any other.
Seriously.
Even though the players on the pitch. But the one and only the voice of Bundesliga for ESPN, the voice of on EAFC, The one and only Derek Ray. Derek, what's up?
Oh my goodness, what an introduction. I've never had an introduction quite like that. I'm rather flattered. Thank you very much it. It was lovely to meet you in Hamburg on that night, the night of the derby, the Stadt Derby. And here we go.
Yeah.
Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah,
so you heard it there, Hamburg.
we're going to get into the...
Yes.
My man, I love it. The pronunciation king.
Yo, my guy, bro. I'm going to start calling you Webster, first name, last name, dictionary, because you just say it all correct.
Or Webster, if you want to be...
Yeah, that's true. Oh, my God.
No, but I wanted to give you a deserving introduction, because I feel like every time, obviously, when I turn on EAFC and I'm an addict like many other people, I play the game quite a bit, and you are the one who gets, you introduce me into each match that I lose, okay? But I want to start, Alexis just obviously made the joke about pronunciation, and this is you are an announcer. You've been for several years. We'll probably talk MLS a little bit, because you also did that as well in the U.S. But when it comes to pronouncing names, cities, stadiums correctly, you are the king of this. You do your homework. Sometimes announcers can not necessarily be lazy, but they'll take an easy way out or try to make it understandable to the audience. But you say, hey, no, I'm going to do justice by... the German language, the stadiums, the culture here, and you say everything right. And sometimes you sort of get like teased for it, saying things the way they should be said.
Well, it's just my philosophy. I've always done it this way. I studied languages many years ago, big passion of mine. And it really comes down to respect for me. And I've bumped into so many footballers as a commentator, and one of the things I always try to do is get their names correct. And in these conversations, it's been reinforced to me that it means an awful lot to somebody when the name is said correctly. And I think, yeah, you're right. You know, it's easy sometimes to get it half right, or to try to say, well, people won't understand it if I use this particular sound or that particular sound. But again, it comes down to respect. And I always tell the story, when I was working in Scotland, and I'm from Scotland originally, a few years ago, there was a player whose name I was sure had been butchered by everybody. And I was determined to get it right. So I always would talk to the players in the tunnel. And I had a chat with this particular player. And I said to him, I said, everybody is calling you El Alagui. That was the name that was used by most people at the time. I said, is that how you say your name? And he said, no, it's actually El Alagui. And I said, okay. I said, well, I can put that right for you tonight by saying it the way you want to say it. And his eyes lit up. He said, yeah, Farid El Alagui, that's my name. So called him that. He had a good game, as it turned out, for Dundee United. And then a few weeks later, as you do, I met him again in the tunnel. And he came straight over to me, big smile on his face. And he said, thank you for doing that. He said, my dad was in London at the time watching. This is a French North African player. And he said it made his day to hear our name said properly and not, you know, just kind of, you know, the first thing that came into people's heads. So I think that that is, to me, proof positive that it's worth getting right. And there will always be somebody in the audience, you know, especially when you're covering a World Cup or a tournament with international components, there'll be somebody there who goes, okay, that guy is showing us respect, and respect is what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would just imagine the other announcers were just like, Steve.
No, they're like, who's that guy? Oh, that's how you pronounce it?
And listen, I've got it wrong myself in the past. I'm not trying to pretend absolutely perfect when it comes to this. I've got it wrong. But I think that there's something in correcting yourself and saying, okay, yeah, I did get it wrong before, but this is actually what his name is. There's a tendency sometimes for us all to be stubborn and to say, well, we've called him this, so now we have to keep calling him that forevermore. And that makes no sense to me, because we make mistakes in life every day, in every aspect of life, but we try to learn from the mistakes and correct them.
Maybe you could shed a light on what the world of being a commentator is, because as comedians, if I hear Christian do a joke, and you know, your goal is to be as universal as possible, right?
Yeah.
You want everyone sitting in that audience to relate to the joke you're about to say. So sometimes you'll put things in there to make it more palatable to everyone. But if I hear something, I could go to Christian and go, yo, it's actually done this way, not that way. Or you're supposed to say it like this. And you're like, oh, okay, thanks. Or someone else could give me that note. Do you ever give notes to anyone? Because what I hear a lot, and what Christian was referencing, especially for Latinos, bro, I hear Martinez. And we all know it's Martinez. Yeah. And what bothered me the most was a gentleman from MLS made his way to Newcastle. What a day. And the announcer goes, Miguel Almirón. When I know his name is Miguel Almirón. And maybe you don't have to say it with the accent, Miguel?
At least for us, it's like, I mean, these are pretty easy names to say. I mean,
pretty common. That's my uncle's name.
I mean, as from a subjective, and we speak Spanish, so it's easy for us. But we also think, like, if you can get a Polish name with 12 consonants correctly, you can get...
If you can say Chesney, you can say Miguel.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely the case. In the US market, then I think there's no excuse for not getting Spanish names right. I mean, it is part of the US culture. But I would say that I think that we shouldn't just strive to get Spanish names right. We should try to get all names right, you know? So it's the same level of respect either way. But I do think, and I'd have to say this, you know, as somebody from the United Kingdom, there's a strange tendency in the UK to make a bit of a mess of Spanish names. I put that down to the fact that Spanish is not as widely spoken in the UK. And so I think it does befuddle a lot of people. But you're right. I mean, Martinez, remember when Roberto Martinez was managing for the first time in the UK, and he was being called, as you said, Martinez. And I mean, listen, we all just try to do it the best way that we can. And we try to have our own standards. That's what it comes down to. It's not going to be 100% perfect. But I always say, you know, 95% is better than 5%, sure. You know. So
I will say that,
make the effort.
Even names being mispronounced in the UK, because it's so much part of like the zeitgeist, in especially of like football culture that we get. Sometimes I find myself saying, oh, Roberto Martinez. I'm like, no, I shouldn't be doing that.
That one in particular, I thought maybe he pronounced it that way. I was like, all right, maybe he comes from a different area.
You see, I'm a bit prickly about it because I'm from Scotland. And in Scotland, we have obviously our own pronunciations and we have names that are distinctly Scottish, you know. And I think we grew up being a bit annoyed in Scotland because most of the broadcasting in the UK centered on London and the southeast of England. And, you know, obviously it's a different sound that's made, but it's often sort of regarded as the sound of authority. But you know, we would grow up hearing a lot of our Scottish towns said the wrong way,
right.
You know, and so I think it's always been a little bit of a chip on the shoulder thing for me from that point of view.
We just always, we all in agreement. We all can't stand the English, Derek.
Yeah. Gray. No.
He never said that, but we knew what you meant.
No, definitely not.
I get it.
No, it's funny when you hear it back. We're like, where is it? But it's nice to know that other people at least recognize it. Is there one that probably stuck to you the most? It could be either a Scottish town. What's like the worst mispronunciation that you've heard that you've maybe even tried to correct?
Well, the one that I'm trying to think of an obvious one that comes up all the time. We have a mountain, or yeah, it's actually a mountain in Scotland, a famous one, which is actually quite hard to say for a non-Scot, because we make the sound, which in a, you know, for a lot of people, it's not a very pleasant sound to make, CH, you know, very guttural. In the Germanic languages, it's a common sound as well. But we have a mountain called Loch Nagar. You know, now we're quite proud of that mountain in my part of Scotland, in the Eastern Highlands, Loch Nagar. And I remember there was a racehorse in the 70s, and this racehorse was quite good, and they'd given the racehorse this name, Loch Nagar. But the commentators in England, they didn't know the name at all, or the reference, or what the mountain was. And this racehorse was known as Loch Nagar.
Loch Nagar. That's crazy.
You know, and so to people in Scotland, it's like, never
what mountain is that?
You
know? Wait, is it the Loch Ness Monster?
It is the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
You've got to say that. The Loch Ness Monster. You see, very good. I like that. I like
Bro, next
that.
Time I go to Glasgow, I'm going to pull that out. Yeah.
The Loch Ness Monster.
So I mentioned also that you worked in MLS. You were an announcer for New England Revolution, Galaxy, a couple teams. When you see the league now, I don't even know. Are you living in the US or in the UK right now?
Well, strictly speaking, my address is Massachusetts,
okay.
I travel a lot, as you can imagine, in my job, so I never quite know where I am.
Yeah.
A lot of time, obviously, in Germany and in the UK. So, I'm out and about quite a bit.
Sure. So when you see what the league has become now from when you were covering, because it was in the late 90s, I believe, that you started covering those matches. Look, obviously having Messi in the league, even seeing where the Revs are and their success in the early 2000s to kind of sort of like where they are now. But looking at the league as a whole, what are your kind of impressions of, especially leading into a World Cup and thinking about how soccer in the United States is going to be affected by the World Cup and how MLS is going to be affected as well?
Well, it's come a long way since the early days. When I covered it, it was a little bit, and I'll use an expression that I might use on air, a bit ragtag and bobtail. It was sort of, you know, thrown together, you know, with the best will in the world. It was one of the goals after the 94 World Cup to have a professional league. Some of the players who were around in the early years, you know, were happy to be professionals, probably thought that they were lucky to be professionals because it maybe wasn't something that they'd even...
Taylor Twellman, right?
Taylor was later. I mean, Taylor's a good player. Taylor's a good player in MLS. So it was before Taylor. It was before that generation. You did have some, you know, top level players or, you know, national team players of the USA. You know, for example, in New England, we had a guy called Alexi Lalas, who I think people still know to this day, and Mike Burns, who was still the local hero.
He's a Twitter hate follow. And you know,
I don't think he minds it completely.
He loves it. Guy's a big fan of wrestling.
I'll probably see him covering a certain tournament in a few months,
and I
think he would say he doesn't mind that at all. Mike Burns was the sort of the local hero, the Massachusetts boy who was there, and we had Frank Stapleton, who was the coach who I looked up to because, you know, he'd been a great player in the UK when I was growing up, so had a lot of really interesting chats with Frank. But it has come a long way since then. And I know people have frustrations with it. You know, I think I probably do as well when I think about what it could be in terms of the organization of it. And, you know, it does seem to me that far too many teams go into the playoffs and it sort of renders the season not as important as it could be. But these are sort of small details in the grand scheme of it. And I think it is important that there's a professional league in the USA. And it started sort of, not going to say with shaky foundations, because they were determined to learn from the mistakes of the previous professional leagues. But it's still around, so that is a plus.
Yeah. Were you already living in the U.S. When you started working in MLS?
Yeah, what people don't know about me is that I actually came to the USA, first of all, and got out of broadcasting for a couple of years. And it's funny, we're in a World Cup year. I was the media officer, the head of media for the Boston venue at the 1994 World Cup.
Oh.
So I was on the inside. So I got out of broadcasting and was offered this job by a guy called Jim Trecker, one of the best people I've ever worked with. He was the head of media for the World Cup organizing committee, really knew his stuff, somebody you do learn from, and certainly did learn from in my case. And then I had the task of putting it all together on the media front. So when you have that job, you are in the inner sanctum, so to speak. So you're privy to a lot of things that you're simply not as a journalist. And of course, we had Argentina in our venue in Boston in 94. And that was during the whole Diego Maradona business.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was quite a time to be doing that. And I've sort of moonlighted doing that from time to time for FIFA tournaments as a media officer, not in recent years, but in the years after that, I did so while continuing to broadcast, but took a bit of time out from it to take on that role, then got back into broadcasting with ESPN once the World Cup in 94 was over.
Well, then you might be the perfect person to ask because of your perspective. You've been in the U.S., but you've maintained sort of an idea or a long time understanding of what goes on in the U.K. and in Germany and Europe across the board. So you might be the perfect person to ask. The perception of MLS, right? When it comes to, there's a lot of need or desire to get this sort of validation from the big European leagues or some of the folks associated with it. But just the general understanding or the general perception of where the league is now, what are people saying about MLS now outside of the US?
I think if you're honest, it really comes down to what people think from afar as opposed to actually watching it. I'll be honest with you. I think that this is just my opinion. I think that there's too much made of the idea that people, I'm from Scotland. Obviously, I can speak about Scotland. I spend a lot of time in Germany. You know, there's nobody really of significance who's staying up until 2-3 in the morning to watch the Columbus Crew take on Kansas City. You know, I think people would have to realize that. But I think there is an appreciation of highlights nowadays and digital clips, and everything is about digital clips. So I think people know, they know about the stars in MLS. They know that the league is there. I think that, and I can maybe use the Scottish example here, what has happened with Wilfred Nancy just in the last few weeks, that has not done the image of MLS any good at all in somewhere like the UK. And you can say that's unfair. You can say the whole thing was unfair to Nancy. Or you could sort of say, well, he went to, I'm not going to say a higher level of football, but he went to a football country where it really matters, and he was very dogmatic in sticking to what he wanted to do. Whereas I think in a country like Scotland, you have to be a little bit pragmatic at the start and come in and say, all right, I can't do what I did in MLS. One of the problems with MLS is, maybe it's a good thing for a coach, but one of the problems compared to someone like Scotland is that there's this sort of perception that you can lose 4 or 5 games and does it really matter? If you lose 4 or 5 games in the middle of the season, but then you pick up towards the end and you're rounding into form come the playoffs, then that can be the way to do it. Place like Celtic, get to do that.
Our comment section has reminded us of that.
Yeah.
We were obviously supportive of Wilfred Nancy going to, you're sort of hopeful. You see how the Columbus Crew, how the Columbus Crew play. You're like, wow, if Celtic could play this sort of like beautiful style of football. And then, but after watching several games and going, seeing the whole Wilfred Nancy saga, and I don't watch Celtic regularly, but there's a couple, now I'm watching a little bit more intently. And I'm like, this is, I'm not to say that the Columbus Crew are better than Celtic, but the style of football is maybe a little bit more entertaining rather than just simply the ambiance or the pressure from the fan. Like there's some football offers different things in different countries and different, a different environment. And MLS has its own where sometimes, you can lose a couple games, but maybe you'll see some interesting style of play that you wouldn't get to see anywhere else in the world. But at Celtic, it's just simply like
the old firm. There's no game that happens in the U.S. that's as important to the fans as the old firm is. And to lose that was the death knell for him, no?
Well, and you have to know that going in. You know, you have to know. And it's not even just Celtic and Rangers. I come from a place called Aberdeen in the northeast of Scotland. And,
Sir Alex Ferguson, you know,
exactly. I grew up with Fergie as our manager when Aberdeen were legitimately the best team in Europe, believe it or not, for a spell in 1983 going into 84. The facts back that up. But even in a place like Aberdeen, city of just over 200,000, you know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. 200,000 city, but how many people go to the home games to watch the local team? It's about almost a tenth of the population is going to watch every single home game. So imagine if you had that in the US, you know, imagine if you had that across the US. So this is what you have in a country like Scotland. It's 5 million. And, you know, it was interesting. There was some sort of weird social media war between MLS fans and Scottish fans during the whole Nancy episode, which I thought was a bit ridiculous because, as you said, I think very articulately, it's two different football cultures and we shouldn't try to compare and contrast. In Scotland, football is everything. And, you know, if you're the manager of Celtic, if you're the manager of Aberdeen in Aberdeen, every minute of every day, people are watching you. You know, you don't have peace. You're not going to be given that. In MLS, you can probably be a bit anonymous, you know. And I think, to be honest, that's the appeal of it for a lot of players who come to the USA or to Canada. They think, okay, yeah, you know, I'm going to be recognized from time to time, but there'll be long spells where I can do things with my family and go where I want. And so that does have something to be said
for
it.
We sort of got a taste of that as well because we're in New York. We've been covering, we started really with MLS, right? When NYCFC started here in 2015. And then occasionally, you know, we don't really talk about the Scottish League very much, but we dipped our toes and then we're like, hey, let's talk about this a bit because there's an MLS manager coming in. And then the comment section is the same people that are mad at Wolf or nothing. They're mad at us. They're like, hey, take those podcast microphones away. You don't deserve them. Or Americans shouldn't be talking about football. And it's like, okay, it's quite serious out there. Yeah.
Which is good. Yeah. That's why you... The pressure and that the what's the word I'm looking at? The ambiance is why you watch those games.
Yeah, it's absolutely, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, it's in every single form of media there. And, you know, that is football in many European countries. I think Scotland's a bit of an extreme example, to be honest, because we are a small country of 5 million. But there are more people who go to football, to top flight football, per head of the population than anywhere else in the world. You know, so Wilfred Nancy chose, if you like, the ultimate pressure cooker, the ultimate pressure test for his first main role in European football. And not every job is like that. So, it was a baptism of fire, let's say.
He should have started at Patrick Thistle. You know what I mean? Work your way up.
Partick.
Sorry, Partick
Thistle. The R is before the T. I know.
Sorry, I actually knew it, too. Partick Thistle.
How are you going to get a name wrong in front of Derek Ray, bro?
No. Or Sam Mirren or something. Start.
But I would say this. I've spoken to, you know, there have been Scottish players who've made the move to MLS down the years. There's a guy called John Spencer who made the move in the early years of MLS and stayed for a long time and became a little bit of a legend in MLS terms. He was a good Scottish player, but I think rose to even greater heights in MLS. And he would tell you it was the best move he ever made, you know? And you have somebody like Ryan Gold, who's had a great career in MLS and with Vancouver. And I think there will continue to be players like that. But yeah, it's just a different environment. This is the great thing, you know, about football. I think we should always remember this. Football is the world sport. It's the most popular sport in the world. But every country has its own little take on it. You know, if you go to, I remember going to Argentina for the first time, going to a Boca game, and you know, what a treat that was, you know, to feel that sort of energy, which, you know, you could say is comparable to what you get in a country like Scotland, but again, has its own little Argentinian take, you know, with steak sandwiches before the game and, you know, some of the best steak you'll ever eat in the world if you're a carnivore.
I'm in.
Sounds like it. And you know, the same all over the world. And I've obviously particularly partial to German football as a Bundesliga commentator, spends a lot of time in Germany and that has an energy really born of the setup in Germany, 50+1, where fans decide a lot of things and help keep prices low and make it for the ordinary person, as opposed to the prawn sandwich brigade, as Roy Keane famously said about 20 years or so ago.
I love a prawn sandwich, by the way. you obviously, being an announcer in Bundesliga, you're getting to see a lot of Americans. There's a great history of American players plying their trade in Germany, especially when they're young. What's the general sentiment of the American players in Bundesliga? And do you think that that's something that's going to continue?
I think it will continue. I think that the clubs have seen that the USA is a fertile market for them. I think they feel that American players are coachable. They're quite adaptable. They're quite hungry. And I think the Bundesliga, even the Zweite Bundesliga, the second league, I think gives American players what they're looking for. And that is a different sort of stage. They want to improve. They feel that they need to be in that competitive environment in order to improve. And it's a hard school, you know, it's a hard school to go to. I remember he's not American and he's technically not Canadian. He's English, but he grew up in Canada. Owen Hargreaves, you know, really good footballer. I used to work with Owen a lot on BT Sport in the UK. And I remember Owen saying to me, he's so grateful that he went to Bayern or got to go to Bayern as a you know, as he said, as a clueless 16-year-old, didn't know the language, didn't know the culture, but he said it really toughened me up. Because it made me the footballer that I was to become. And I think that's true, and I think that you do see it, and I think that in Germany, you get some of the best coaching that you're going to get anywhere in the world. You get some of the best tactical thinking that you're going to get anywhere in the world. And, you know, there's no guarantee that these players will stay in the Bundesliga or stay in Germany. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. You know, sometimes their level goes up and their level goes down. But I think most people would agree there's no better place to learn than Germany. And it speaks for itself, the records of one of the most successful football countries anywhere.
Yeah. What is the, you know, how, you know, sometimes people say there's like Anglophiles. I don't know. Mm. Is it a Deutschophile? Is that a thing?
Germophile?
Germanophile.
Germanophile, right? Germanophile. So there's, you know, when I, even seeing you in Germany, I believe you speak fluent German or?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
I do,
so
yeah.
What was the interest in learning the language, but then also the league, the culture? I mean, we've been to Germany 2 times.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn. Alexis grew up in Newark, New Jersey. Like, it's just so so different to us. But it's been such a fascinating, like, culture to just sort of be around or even be welcomed as Latinos, as comedians. Like, the fact that I always sort of tell the story of, like, I remember when we met somebody who worked for Bayern Munich, the New York office. And this is like maybe 2016. And I asked them, hey, when Bundesliga clubs want to work with comedians, what do they do? He's like, that's not a thing. They do not do that. They don't.
They do not allow that.
So the fact that when we got to Germany and they were so welcoming, which was my assumption was that they were not going to be. But what made you sort of fall in love with German football and then German culture as a whole?
Well, it was sort of German culture first. I was born in 1967, which to many people will seem like a very long time ago. Yeah. And so the first World Cup that I can remember was in 1974, which was in West Germany. So back then we had a West Germany and an East Germany. And I was glued to every game. And it sort of spawned an interest, not just in the football, was obsessed with the football, watched most games with my dad on the television. But also an interest in German culture and language. So I would, you know, have a look on the globe that we had at home and point to the different German cities. And at around the age of 8 or 9 in Scotland, we learn a language. And in those days, it was either French or German. And it was potluck as to whether you were in the French class or the German class. I ended up being in the German class, which I really wanted to be because I already had this interest in it, and found that the language spoke to me. And I think a lot of it comes down to, again, the sounds that we make organically in Scotland. And if you think about it, if you can, you know, look on a map, you can see that there's the North Sea, which would have been the former highway, you know, waterway, you know, centuries ago when trade was done. The North Sea was if you like, the highway. And so, you know, you could take a boat from Aberdeen and, you know, eventually end up in Hamburg. there's Hamburg again for you. Yeah. You know, you liked how I said that earlier. And I was also a bit of a radio nut. And in those days, you know, because of where we were, right on the North Sea coast, we had a radio signal with Northern Germany, with Hamburg. So I could actually listen to the radio channels from Hamburg before internet, you know, obviously way before internet was ever thought of. So
Al Gore hadn't invented it yet.
Yeah.
Nobody had. So I would listen, I would fall asleep at night with this little transistor battery operated radio, listening to German music and German traffic reports and also the Bundesliga, which was on German radio at the time. And so I found, as a German student at the time, it was helping my German and became my best subject. And sort of, you know, from there, it just became a huge part of my life. But interestingly, the broadcasting of the Bundesliga really has only happened for me in the last 15 years or so. You know, I've been commentating for actually be 40 years professionally in April. It'll be the 40-year anniversary for me as a commentator. But it's only in the last 15 years. Oh, thank you. Didn't expect that.
Well deserved. We have an audience here.
Right on cue. That was impressive. So 15 years ago when I was working back in the UK with ESPN UK, they started a channel in the UK and I went back as one of the commentators. They had Bundesliga rights, asked me if I would like to be part of that. And of course, I wanted desperately to be part of that. And then BT Sport came in, took over ESPN's rights when ESPN UK folded and continued to do that. And then not long after that, the Bundesliga decided that they wanted to have their own world feed. Now, what is a world feed? People always ask me that. World feed is very common nowadays. The English language commentators you hear, whether it's the Premier League or the FA Cup or the Bundesliga, is very often a world feed. It's not specific to the broadcaster that's showing it. You know, you're getting the same feed that the people in Australia are getting or in South Africa or any other English-speaking country. And so we had a chat and, you know, they said, yeah, we'd love for you to be part of our team. So that's been a big part of what I've done in the last few years as a freelance broadcaster and typically do probably about 50 to 60 Bundesliga commentaries per season. So it's very much a labor of love. It's in the heart.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of culture.
You can tell. I mean, my last question about this, especially at that young of an age, being interested in German culture, there must have been a lot of stigma attached because there was clearly people hated Germany for a long time, especially in the UK. So I would imagine in the 70s, it wasn't necessarily a popular thing.
Yeah, you're listening to the Axis.
Yeah, you're right. In those days, it was. I mean, we had on UK TV, we had a comedy series, talking to comedians here, comedy series. You know, have a look at it if you ever get a chance. If you want to look at classic British comedy, comedy series called Dad's Army, which was basically a sort of a spoof on this kind of amateur British army, the Home Guard, they called it. You know, they sort of part-time butchers and bakers who masqueraded as soldiers during the Second World War and what they were up against, but they made a comedy out of it. You know, they made it into something to chuckle at, which I think is very, very British. I'm not sure you could do that in the US quite so much. But yeah, at that time there was a bit of hostility and Germany, you know, wasn't necessarily viewed favorably by people a bit older than I. But I found that, again, sometimes it just comes down to what speaks to you. But once I started going to Germany and forged a relationship with a school there, thanks to my teacher, Brian Steele, who was very supportive of all my efforts with the language, and then began to have friends in Germany and, you know, people who are pleased to say are still my friends all these years later, you realize kind of the things you have in common. I do think the language is an important thing. And you know, I'm talking to two guys who obviously, you know, immersed in another language as well as English. And I think it's a great barrier breaker. I think that there's nothing like understanding other people in their own language, you know? And so I always say to people, if you can learn a language, do it. It doesn't really matter what the language is. Find one that speaks to you and it will broaden your horizons. And my goodness, you know, in this world, we all need to have our horizons broadened because there are many people who want us to go the other way.
It's true. You walk into a Latin house and you're not Latino and you speak Spanish, the
you
cheers and food you're gonna get will change your life.
Look at who invited the celebrity.
Yeah, oh my God.
No, I mean, even, you know, going to Germany, we went to a bunch of cities, but when we went to Hamburg, And you know, we did the tour of the São Paulo Stadium. We did the tour of the Hamburg Stadium.
Yeah.
Dortmund, we've done a bunch of them. But the one thing that is fascinating, I think a lot of people maybe in other countries may not be aware of, is how much Germans embrace or at least are realistic about their history. And they say like, hey, these are the things that happened.
These are unfortunate, but it happened.
Yeah.
There's a photo at São Paulo Stadium of the team giving the salute. And yeah, I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. But they put it at eye level. I'm like, buddy, you put it down. You know what I mean? Make us find it. Don't make it so obvious.
Yeah. Now, this is why, for example, if you go to Berlin, I think it amazes people. And obviously, I'm a child, if you like, of the Berlin Wall because of when I was born. You know, it was always a thing when I grew up. For younger people nowadays, when you talk about the Berlin Wall and about the communist bloc in the East, people don't necessarily know what you're talking about. But, I mean, we grew up with that. I studied right on the border, looking at the border guards, you know, from the other side of the fence with their binoculars, you know, peering in. And so that's why they've kept elements of the Berlin Wall in place, you know, in Berlin. So the you don't forget, you know, you remember, you learn from history. And, you know, I think it's a very poignant thing to say right now because, you know, we're at a point in the world where I think a lot of people have forgotten their history or are choosing not to pay attention to it. But if you go to Germany and you guys saw it, people know all about the horrors of the Second World War, the horrors of the Nazi period, you know, not to put too fine a point on it. And, you know, we have to remember and we have to say never again.
Okay. Yeah. It couldn't have been said better. And it needs to be said today, unfortunately, again. Yeah. From your perspective, because you've spent so much time in the U.S., you know, everyone's expecting a big World Cup bounce, you know, after the World Cup. Do you think this is the moment? Do you think we're in the middle of the apex of the turn where the U.S. becomes much more of a real football country?
I'm not sure. I would hope so, because I think, I mean, what I do think is that it comes in little stages. And when I think about 94 and where the U.S. was as a football country, you know, very different stage of development. You know, one of my jobs was to create interest in the community and amongst the media. And it was a much harder dig back then because you were dealing, you know, with media people who, I'll be perfectly honest, were often very hostile to the sport. You know, people who were lead writers for newspapers, prominent people on television, and they actively disliked our sport, you know, and I think a lot of it was sort of fear, you know, a bit of jingoism, a bit of, well, I didn't grow up with the sport, a bit of who are these Johnny come latelys, you know, coming in trying to tell us what we should cover. But that has changed, you know, so it's definitely moved on. And I think it moves on with each generation. Certainly, you know, little successes by the US national team help. But I think that it's actually bigger than the US national team because the USA is a different country. You know, it's not like, for example, my country, Scotland, we haven't been at the World Cup since 1998. We were just about every World Cup all the years I was growing up. Now there's sort of the novelty value. We're back and everybody's very excited. USA has been to most World Cups. You know, it was a surprise when they didn't qualify in 2018. You could probably write a book about that. But I think that in the USA, it's much bigger. And I've always said that, yes, of course, that the TV ratings show that, you know, USA games are going to get the highest ratings. But this is unlike most other countries in that there will always be people and large numbers of people who say want to watch Mexico over the USA or want to watch Argentina over the USA or some who want to watch Germany over the USA or England, you know, take your pick. And that is simply painting the picture as to what America is. And to be honest, again, I'm speaking personally here, that's what I like about the USA. You know, it's not a monolithic culture. It's a little bit of everything. And that is the beauty of it. You know, and that's the beauty of football as well. So I think that having it in the USA and Canada and Mexico, I will say, let's not forget Canada and Mexico, because the number of people I've heard saying the World Cup in the USA, I will say, well, it's also in Canada and Mexico. Let's not forget about our very good friends to the north and to the south, you know, who are great people and deserve to have it as well. So yeah, the three countries together this time, I think we'll know a lot more after the tournament in terms of what the interest is. But I think certainly it stands to reason that it's going to be bigger than ever. And having it, you know, in American cities, in Canadian cities, in Mexican cities, it's going to make it feel more real to people who maybe haven't had quite the interest when it's been in faraway countries.
Well, now, I mean, we just talked about it on the last episode. Soccer is now, according to a survey, the third most popular sport, or the third favorite sport of people who took this survey.
Yeah.
So it's a good time. But a big reason why the sport is so popular is because of EAFC.
And why? Because of you.
Because your voice.
Not because of me.
So, I mean, I remember seeing a clip a couple months ago of you. I think it was, I don't know if it was like Twitch streamers or like, you know, guys that play EAFC. And you sat London, next to them and you did commentary for the video game that they were playing live. And it was like, LeBron James is sitting next to them like, what?
It's crazy.
But it is, as far as this particular gig, right? I mean, you worked in media a long time, but being the voice in a video game has an influence that I think maybe even 20 years ago, most people didn't even think was possible. But almost more people hear your voice in the video game than they do hearing you call games. So that's a reality. So is there anything in particular you didn't think my life would become this because of this video game?
Do they recognize you at drive-thrus or something?
It's funny you say that. That has actually happened.
Oh my God!
It happened not long after I started doing the video game. And I was at a drive-thru and ordering something. And it was a young chap originally from Italy, actually. And so I made the order, and then I came through, and he just sort of looked at me. He said, "You're not that guy on the video game, are you?" And I said, "Actually, I am." He said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I live here." He said, "What? How can you live? How can you live in my town?"
I hope you didn't pay for that meal.
I think I did and gave him a tip, actually.
There you go.
That'd
be nice. But no, it's one of these things that there's no doubt about it. It's by far the biggest thing I do in terms of notoriety nowadays. You know, how could it be otherwise? It's the most iconic sports video game that there is. And I've just been lucky enough to be there during these last few years, you know, and you do have to be lucky. You have to have a producer who likes the way you sound, who could visualize you being in their video game. And so happened the producer who was responsible at the time had been listening to my work for years, apparently. I didn't know it, of course, at the time, but I'd been listening when I was doing the Champions League for ESPN. You know, ESPN used to have the Champions League rights in the early days of the tournament. And he'd made a mental note and said, "If ever I get the chance, I want to talk to this guy." And so, the call came one day. I was in Dresden in Eastern Germany. It was a rainy day, a horrible day. But all of a sudden, I got this call from somebody saying, "Okay, there's an interest in you from EA Sports." Well, they didn't actually present it as EA Sports. They just said a video game, can't say too much more. And then it matured and had to go to Vancouver, did an audition in front of several senior EA people, and we agreed that we would work together. And here we are, I think, 8 years later, and I'm still fortunate enough to be asked back.
What's the audition process like? I mean, you got to
probably play.
Derek don't have to audition.
Pick up a phone. Why gotta go to Vancouver? You want to know what I sound like?
Well, it's always nice to go to Vancouver, so I was very happy.
Take a free trip.
But I think what they wanted to do, and I can understand it, is they wanted to, you know, they knew my work, but they wanted to hear how it sounded in the context of the game as opposed to, you know, doing a live match. So they had a game running in front of me, the video game, and I just commentated organically. And I think you have to be lucky. And I think as well, it does come down to your style a bit because, you know, there's so many colleagues out there who I have tremendous respect for, you know, brilliant commentators. And we all do it our own way. This is the thing. There's no one right way to do it. But I think for a video game, you have to have a style that's easy to edit because what the process is, you know, I might record something that they want to join on to something that I did 7 years ago, you know, and it has to all sound seamless. And there's some people who have more long-winded styles, or maybe they don't edit together so well.
It might be tough to get Ray Hudson in the game. It's just a little bit of editing required.
Ray is a wonderful communicator. but yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a good point.
Yeah.
Ray's style might be a little bit harder to do that with.
Well, you Scots have really made your way in this commentary thing. I just thought about this.
Well, I always call Ray an honorary Scot because he's from just over the border. He's from England.
Is he really? I thought he was Scottish.
Newcastle. Yeah, no, he's from Newcastle. But if you ever study it, Newcastle, the accent... to somebody who doesn't know, might sound a bit Scottish. It's a little bit like
a Geordie accent, if I'm not mistaken.
A Geordie, exactly, yeah. Which sort of, it's actually got elements that remind me a little bit of how people speak in the countryside where I'm from.
You don't pronounce consonants. It's very difficult to understand.
We do. We have our glottal stops a little bit.
I went to Glasgow and I was at a bar and everyone else around me was starting to get pretty drunk, I was like, I've stopped understanding everyone here. I need captions. Dude, you've been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know how busy you are. Give me one rule you would change about the Scottish Premiership that would make it the biggest league in the world, real quick.
Oh, one rule that would change.
Speaking of too many teams in the playoffs, how about that? How about Scottish League?
Here's what I would do. I would just make Aberdeen the biggest team in the entire league.
That counts, baby.
Well done. Good rule.
Just get more and more people. Just make it a rule. Yeah, have to support Aberdeen.
I love it.
Derek Ray, it's an absolute honor. Like we said, I mean, look, we hear your voice. I hear your voice pretty much every day in the video game. But it's an honor. You are welcome back on the show anytime. Obviously, best of luck after the rest of the Bundesliga season. And also, you're going to be covering the World Cup for Fox in the U.S. So we're going to be hearing your voice quite a bit this summer. Derek Ray, everybody, go check out Bundesliga on ESPN. And then obviously, watch the World Cup this summer. But Derek Ray, an absolute honor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Muchas gracias, muchachos.
Hey, mira, now I got to give you food.